Thank you for joining us today. I'm your host, Tracy Bennett, and with me are certified financial planners Tyler Cook and Tony Payne. Today's topic is one I think everybody can relate to. We spend our whole lives talking about saving money, the stress of saving money, trying to figure out how to do it. Is there an order to it? And that's kind of where we're going today, the sequence of savings. So everything from funding HSAs, Roths, Roth IRA accounts, 401ks, and taxable accounts. So I kind of want to get into the weeds on those subjects. So starting with strategy, not order. If you've got some money to save, how do you even begin to decide where it goes first?
What's your goal?
And that's a wonderful problem to have, of course. You know, there are going to be some people out there going, yeah, well.
Yeah, whenever you find yourself waffling on where to start, just center yourself around what's the goal. What are you trying to accomplish with that saving? Use retirement as the starting one in this example. I think you and I would agree, maximize as much as you possibly can through an employer-provided plan. At the minimum, do enough to cover the match. So for example, if they're going to cover 5% of pay, the employer would pay for that, then you should do at least 5%. That's what we call free money. It's there on the table. So you'd be silly to contribute 1% because you're only going to get a 1% match. But if you do 5%, you'll get the full match. So what's your goal? That's the starting point. And then we'll probably arm wrestle a lot of those other things too on what's actually best.
You'll win.
I feel like there's, from the audience perspective, for people who are just getting started and maybe even some savvy wealthy folks who think they have all the answers, let's tell people what's the undercurrent of doing that. What's the most important component to do that?
Flexibility. I think it's all about flexibility. That's what we're going to talk about today. And I know we hate it when we say it depends, and we'll try to avoid that. But a lot of this is going to be dependent upon what your goals are. So if your goals are, I want to work and I enjoy working and I want to run my business until I can't, that's going to be a different saving strategy than I want to be done at 50 and never have to worry about working again. So when we go through this and we talk about these different, we'll call them buckets. You know, you call them buckets, vehicles, tools, whatever you want to call them, products, I guess. But the idea is these are different ways to save, different strategies, different buckets. And each one of them is going to have a little different impact.
Doesn't it, in my mind, doesn't it start? And again, it doesn't matter if you're out of college, you know, on your first job or, you know, living in affluence, you know, with big toys and a great lifestyle. In fact, that might even be more of a challenge for those people because money is coming in so quickly and maybe they're not being super judicious about what they're spending. Doesn't it start though? I think a lot of people, I'm rambling, but a lot of people would say, dude, that doesn't matter. I make what I make. If I can't, you can't bleed a turnip. So is that the school of thought that people should be having, or should they transition that thought process, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I think, again, going back to what the goal is, it's going to push you one direction or the other. And what's more important to you? Go back to the example of the 401k. Are you more concerned about saving taxes today? Mm-hmm. Or like we've talked about in other episodes, what's the tax consequence in retirement? Which one's more important to you? Because you can strategize right now, especially if you're earlier in your working career, to pay more tax now to have a tax-free lifestyle in the future. Mm-hmm. So that really dependent upon what's more important to you. And I think a lot of times people get stuck there too, the analysis paralysis and looking at spreadsheets and what type of contribution is best.
Yeah, that's
so you just have to get started, right? You can always change these things. For most plans allow you to change things throughout the year. But sometimes we'll see a hybrid. Somebody contributes some pre-tax money to their 401k plan, and they'll also put Roth contributions. You mentioned Roth IRAs, but you can actually do Roth 401k contributions as well. I think you agree with me on this one.
For yeah,
any young person, that's a huge win.
It makes a lot of sense. And we'll go back to the beginning almost, because you said something there, Tracy. It makes sense. I mean, there are people out there who feel like, I can't save. I just don't make enough. And you hear some of the stats out there. And, you know, I had the privilege of talking to a couple high school juniors yesterday and talking about financial planning. It was a financial planning academy over the summer. And I was able to ask them, what was the S&P the year you were born? And it was kind of funny because theirs was about 10 times what mine was. But when you look at it, even now, I mean, they were shocked. It was so impressive to them. And to think that they didn't realize that or they didn't understand that's one of the greatest tools of wealth generation just imparting that wisdom just from the beginning, that helps lead to some of the saving strategy, knowing why you're doing it. Mm-hmm. So the earlier you can see, you know what, this thing isn't rigged, it's not all gone, it's not beyond me, but yes, I got to start somewhere. So if you don't have, I'm sorry, two nickels to rub together, take half of one of them and put it in savings, and everybody has to start somewhere, wherever that somewhere is, whatever that sacrifice might be. And that's just being real here. Again, we have what we have, and to be able to try to sacrifice, put something aside, that's the way to try to get ahead for later on.
So that's where the discipline comes in, that we struggle with as humans. I think, you know, if you want shoes, you know, if you like shoes, that's going to be a problem.
It's right? hard.
Limit
it's
yourself hard. To it's one, one pair of new shoes per shopping trip instead of 10.
When I hear that question over the years too, or the complaint perhaps that there's nothing left to save, just ask a simple question. I said, how much you spend at Starbucks this month? Literally, I asked that question.
You and I have had this conversation over the years. Yeah. You gave up your Starbucks altogether.
I sure did.
Yeah. Best your little caramel macchiatos.
No, I don't do that anymore.
Well, and again, I'm going to admit, I see the memes. I hear the culture out there. You know, what will that add up to? Really, is that, you know, sacrifice my lifestyle for what? Please do the math. Mm-hmm. Go ahead and do the compounding math on what that $5, $6, $7, $8 a day or every other day or maybe even twice a week. Go ahead and look at what that math is over 30 years. Mm-hmm. Go ahead and put that in the S&P 500 or go ahead and invest that. And that is real money. So when you think about being dismissive of, oh, those coffees won't add up for me, it really does. And especially if every dollar matters for you, well, then it's even that much more important. Mm-hmm. So I want to be, again, being real today, I think is my theme, but
now you're tapping into primal behavioral psychology, which I learned a few years into working here. Money is 100% based on behavioral science, behavioral psychology. Getting real with how you grew up feeling about money, what your examples were, and if they weren't great examples, you know, just kind of finding that backbone in yourself to break that and create a discipline that wasn't there in observation.
And I think this is the great setup for today because, again, the idea of all these different buckets you could save in, you have to have the engine to save. Mm-hmm. So no matter what, the idea of pay yourself first, take something off of the top for yourself before you look at what's left. So many people have this income cycle where they get the paycheck, they pay taxes, usually if you're a W-2 employee, then you go ahead and have everything else taken out, maybe your house payment, rent, you know, the cable bill, the phone, all of it. And then you're looking at what's left going, I don't have much to save here. Well, if you flip it and you say, I'm going to save first, maybe that's a 401k where it comes out right away from your paycheck and you maybe don't even see it. You might feel it, mm-hmm. but you're not going to see it and be able to spend it right away. That's called forced savings. Sometimes for people who have that issue of saving, that's the best way to do it. Take it off the top before you ever see it.
Mm-hmm. And you bring up another sort of phrase that I've heard for years and years and years, long before meeting you guys, pay yourself first. But that's so subjective. Because pay yourself first could be 10%, which is what I always grew up hearing. And pay yourself first to somebody with big toys and lots of affluence might say, I'm going to buy a new boat. I mean, is there a template for that? Subjective?
Pay yourself in my mind is save, so not purchase. It's that whatever that number is. And I would say it's not so much a rule of thumb or a number. I wouldn't say 10, 20, 30. But if you have that number that you've said, I'm going to take off the top and you're disciplined about it, that's what's more important. Again, whether it's 10,000 of income, 100 or a million, it's that 10% is 10%. Mm-hmm. And especially if you're younger, your income's growing, well, then naturally you may not feel it because when that income was lower, 10 grand was $1,000. When it's 100,000, it's 10,000. I mean, progressively it goes up, but it was still just 10%.
Mm-hmm. It's crazy too, because you can convince yourself, if you don't automate it, you can convince yourself, especially when you get a pay bump, you can convince yourself, oh, I've got to do this with that pay bump, as opposed to just incorporating it into the out of sight, out of mind process. Automate it, increase your contributions, increase your savings somewhere else. Don't get distracted.
Well, now we can go into that somewhere else, you know, where that somewhere else is. So,
yeah. I mean, the 401k is a great starting point, but there's other vehicles that are out there like IRAs, individual retirement accounts. There's traditional, which would be a kind of pre-tax world, and then there's Roth contributions that you could make as well, depending upon your situation. And I think the Roth idea is very attractive to a lot of people because they know in the future, past age 59 and a half, according to the IRS, you can withdraw that money tax-free. So you save it in your 20s and 30s and 40s, let it keep growing, compounding interest to your point. And then you have a nice bucket of money there in the future that you can tap into tax-free. And that's where I want to go with this, Tracy, is really the strategy on tax diversification in retirement, because what you do today and the buckets you save in now dictate the potential liabilities in the future from a tax perspective, or could reduce those as well. Mm-hmm. So I think a 401k, I'd say if anybody asks, where do I save first? Well, what's the goal? If the goal is retirement, 401k is a no-brainer if you have access to it. There's other plans called simple IRAs and SEP IRAs. We can get into all sorts of stuff today, but that's the big one. If cash flow allows for it, then maximize your Roth IRA bucket if you can do that as well. And then the fun one, Tony, that we like to get into is what we call a brokerage account or a taxable account. And that's where cash flow is good, expenses are managed, you've got extra cash on hand, you don't need it for college savings, for example, or debt reduction, and you just have more money to save. That's when you look into this brokerage account world, because when you're in a scenario where you're able to do that, I'd say most of the time the likelihood is you're able to retire perhaps sooner than most, just call it younger than 60. And if you don't pay attention to where you're saving, you might have this trap of being able to get to your money penalty-free. And that's where the brokerage account comes in, because there's no limitations on it. There's no minimum. There's no maximums. It's kind of the pay tax as you go scenario with a 1099 that you would get come tax time. So you've now created three buckets in this scenario, the 401k, the Roth, and now the brokerage account. And it's all about giving flexibility. People who have those three buckets set up, they have a much more satisfying lifestyle just in terms of being able to get money when they need it. It's on their terms, not the government's.
And when you say brokerage, I think you're talking about a taxable IRA, or are there other flavors?
Taxable account, not an IRA. So
it's not a taxable IRA.
That's a brokerage account.
So do we want to give examples of what those might look like, or?
Yeah, it's just from a tax perspective, it's
just
a
brokerage. You just go somewhere, you go to the bank, or you go to Fidelity.
You'd use an investment platform. I want to open a taxable account. Right.
Yeah, that's how it would be labeled. It would be a brokerage account. And then the other types of a traditional IRA or a Roth IRA, as Tyler mentioned, and a couple other flavors that you might see those boxes. Mm-hmm. But those are the big types we're normally talking about outside of an employer, are your traditional IRA, your Roth IRA, maybe a brokerage account like we're talking about. And we use those terms taxable account, brokerage account. It can be a little confusing. Yeah. And the idea of when you take money out of an IRA, it depends on what kind it is. It might be taxable. Mm-hmm. So if it's a traditional IRA, usually if I have a 401k at work and but I need to make sure I'm setting the stage right. So you're working, you're saving in a traditional 401k, you've retired. You may want to roll that over. You want more control over it. Whatever it is, you roll that into a traditional IRA. That traditional IRA then is your piggy bank in retirement, that whenever you decide to say, hey, I need a pay bump, I need a raise, I need to pay for something, when that money comes out, it's taxable to you. And the Roth IRA you were mentioning, Tyler, you don't have that tax hurdle. So in the brokerage account where we say it's taxable, it's a different kind of tax. So instead of being income tax, it's a capital gains tax. So again, I'm kind of getting in the weeds here, but this is important because if we're thinking about what all these different buckets, why would I pick one over the other? Well, that capital gains rate is lower than some of the income tax rates that are out there. So depending upon where you're at in the world, it might be better for you to say, I'm going to take money out of my brokerage account rather than take it out of my IRA, depending upon how much is there, what your age is. So knowing how the taxes work on it can be really important.
I just got a phone call last week from somebody saying, hey, I'm going to go buy a new car. Where should I take the money from? Mm-hmm. We had that exact conversation because all three of these buckets we're talking about were available. And it made the most sense to actually use the fourth bucket, which we didn't talk about, which is just a bank account, cash on hand.
Are these contingent on income? So does it make more sense for somebody who's making less income to keep the brokerage account on the on deck, or the more money you make, you should look at a Roth? I mean, how's that work? It's actually, the Roth is the reverse, right? When you're making less money, it's better to contribute to the Roth.
It's completely unique to that scenario. So what Tony said earlier about it depends. It truly does depend to answer you directly on that one. So I think that's a key to it. But I want to mention one more thing that just popped in my mind. We talk about different buckets and where to save. Somebody's still working, think of things like HSAs, health savings accounts, or flexible spending accounts, FSAs. They even have dependent care FSAs, which I'm very
But those are all employer accounts, right?
The HSA doesn't have to be. It depends on your scenario. But yes, it'd be run through a payroll setup where you're able to Tony's point, pay yourself first, put it in that bucket. The reason why you do that is for the tax perspective. Mm-hmm. Use the HSA, for example. Your contributions are tax deductible today, so you're not paying tax on your contributions you put in there. They grow tax deferred all those years of compounding if you can be disciplined to let it grow. And then when you take it out for healthcare, it's tax free. So it's triple tax advantaged. And that's a huge win for what conversations about healthcare expenses. But you can build those buckets for later in your life. There's actually a rule now, the IRS says you can actually use HSAs for things outside of medical expenses once you're over age 65. You still have to pay tax on it. But it effectively becomes another IRA. So there's a lot of strategies there. It may be too much for the weeds today.
This might be a question for another podcast, but people have to be careful too. If you don't use it, you lose it. I don't know which account it falls under.
Yeah, HSA is yours forever.
Okay.
The FSA is where you might have some use it or lose it scenarios.
Gotcha. All right.
The HSA is your money.
You hit the tax note. So what happens when somebody's strategy is based entirely on tax perks, but they haven't really thought about what they're actually saving for?
Well, they may be looking at the tax time bomb or basically a big tax bill one day. I don't know how else to say it. I'm tongue-tied. You're going to look at a giant tax bill if all you're doing is trying to minimize taxes every single day. That's every turn you take. Maybe you're a business owner, too, to unwind that, to have what we might say free money or free cash flow, to unlock it from either the business or the things you deferred it from. You're most likely going to pay taxes at some point in time. So depending upon how much income you're earning and when you're earning it, it may make sense. There may be an idea to say, well, let's just take it out over the next 20 years because I won't have any other income. But for the most part, you've got to be really wise thinking about, well, how am I going to withdraw this money? Not just the now, how do I defer taxes, but the back half of it, how am I going to withdraw it? And if you have that strategy and you've thought it out, maybe you're doing the best thing managing your taxes.
The tax thing is interesting to me, too, because we work with a lot of CPAs. I'd encourage everybody just to center themselves around why is this person giving me the advice they are? And a CPA is always going to be, I shouldn't say always, but most of the time is focusing on how do you reduce the current tax liability? Because they'd never like the conversation when somebody complains and says, oh, I owe $10,000. You didn't tell me. So their focus as a CPA is to try and always limit the tax consequences today. Is it actually the right move for your plan in the long term, though? Might not be. That's where we come in as the voice of reason to look at the bigger picture of this, make sure that all the goals are aligned and that the CPA knows what the bigger picture is so that we're strategizing now for the future.
And it's tied into this, but we didn't really touch on it. When you decide your saving strategy, you may still have debt. I mean, the most likely scenario is there is debt out there. So when do you start saving versus when do you pay off debt? That's a common question. Mm-hmm. So the balancing act there too is, it really depends on the interest rates on the debt, the kind of debt, but also it's the behavioral part. I mean, to think about it, everything is a spreadsheet and interest rates, I can't help but say is wrong. You know, if we're just not great savers and we're never going to save and we constantly pay the credit card off and the next month we rack it up and we pay it off again, at the end of the work cycle, we're not going to have much left. But if we're able to take 10 or 20% off of the top of every paycheck before we go through that cycle, going through each and every pay stub or pay cycle spending it, well, now we're going to be able to have a decent amount saved at the end of the day. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what's more important to you? Is it retiring sooner or being debt-free?
Mm-hmm.
You can accomplish both, but what's the priority?
Play now, pay later. That really is profound, and it never changes. You're the way you were at six as you are when you're 60. I can tell you that right now. It's if you lean one direction or the other, it's very hard to break those habits. You just have to get real with what's important and have the discipline.
Yeah. And the strategy of know my goals. If I know when I want to retire, if I know when I want to be debt free, if I know when I want to buy either that next house or have funding for a business, then you can tie back to, OK, okay, what should my priorities be? Mm-hmm. Should this be the year that I really need to pay down debt to put myself in a better position? Or is this a year that, you know what, I need to really start saving again and get ahead for retirement?
So there are no absolutes. It ebbs and flows.
Absolutely.
Yeah, with life. Yeah. So stacking. So a tiered approach to maximize flexibility and growth. This is one of the points I wanted to talk about. I think we pretty much touched on it. Building a savings plan that covers everything from emergencies to long-term goals. And there are lots of tools that people can use. But is there anything else you want to add to that?
Let me paint a picture for a second on that one. So somebody's working in their working career, let's call them 40s or 50s, you know, prime earning years. They've got access to retirement plans through work. They've maybe got young children, still need daycare, for example, other expenses. They've got college planning on their mind as well for maybe some kids that are shifting to that phase. You really got to, again, center yourself around the goal and just work one by one. So maximize the 401k. Maybe do an IRA. Retirement's the first priority in our minds, always, outside of the kids. The kids are a secondary conversation, but going to the savings.
That's hard.
It is very hard.
And you're talking even out of college.
Yeah,
indoctrinate your brain to be that focused.
I'm thinking more the scenario, the kids are still on the payroll. So they're just call them 18 or younger. Most kids are on payroll after 18, but 18 or younger would be ideal.
Yeah, add another.
Yeah, 22, whatever, early years. 20s. The point being is, if you look at the different strategies, this is the picture I want to paint, is you maximize retirement first, then you work down to if you're married, talk to your spouse about what those goals are for retirement. Once you've hit those two, right, you maximize those goals, then we talked about the brokerage account being another one if you want control of your money. But if the kids are there, then you really need to look at HSAs, FSAs, dependent care FSAs, work your way down the list, 529 plans for college. There's so many different ways that you can kind of peel the onion here and really look at the strategy that it can be overwhelming. So again, that's where we come in to reset the goals. And if 1 year your goal is to hit those retirement savings and the next year it's paying down debt, well, let's shift, let's move. Let's talk about how we do
that. You can do that?
Well, of course.
And part of this, though,
you're mind blown.
Yeah, my mind just blew because I have tunnel vision to one aspect of it as a result of my life growing up.
Yeah.
So to juke away from that would, I think, be traumatic for me.
It's part of, I think, the value we bring to the table is painting the picture of what it actually means long term.
That's interesting. I'm sorry, Tony, I interrupted you.
No, you're fine.
Okay, fantastic. So what happens when somebody does all the right things and saves in all the right places, but doesn't really think about how or when they're actually going to use the money? Is that actually a problem that somebody has?
My initial reaction would be no, because they saved it envisioning what they're going to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you get to the point where you've just got enough and you've achieved those goals and you've got extra, then that's where we see maybe the charitable conversations coming in, gifting to various organizations, maybe starting your own foundation. There's a lot of routes that could go.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's a lot of empty mansions in Palm Beach with one person in them with plenty of money that, you know what, that wasn't the answer. That wasn't the fulfilling piece. So to think about what are we all here for, that bigger question, and bring a little philosophy to it, out of all these different buckets you can save in, it comes back to your why. What am I doing this for? And have that tax flexibility, which is what we said at the beginning. You know, you think about, I know I got in the weeds there on the taxes and everything earlier on the brokerage account. But if I wanted to pay for my kids' college and I save in a brokerage account, you know, I can make tons of money there. I did great in my investing, but depending upon my tax rate, I might pay 20% taxes there or more. Well, if I'm saving in a 529 and I made the same investments, well, all that money then can go towards my kids' education. So I did the same exact things, but I did it in a different letter code, a different bucket mm-hmm. that we're explaining today, and I stretched my dollar that much further. Maybe it was an extra semester, maybe it was a couple extra books or something. But the idea is if you're in that bucket that you might not be getting financial aid because you're doing well enough, you're able to save a little bit, but not enough to pay for all these tuition bills, well, create your own financial aid by saving in a 529 maybe, but that's in conjunction with your goal, if that's your goal. And that may be after you were debt-free, after you had your retirement funded. But that's the idea of have a plan, work your plan, and then you can be much more deliberate in which one of these buckets should I fill?
Mm-hmm. Fantastic. That's a great way to end the segment. The moral of the story is it's not just about saving, it's about planning. Get your team of experts together and just dig in. It's hard to do sometimes, but worth it in the long run. And time flies. Thanks for tuning in. We hope you'll join us the next time. We'll be right back.
Foxland Media. Think big.